Okay, so thank you to Ari for shopping the food and for Bacon for organizing this event. And really a big thank you to Ari Bacon for even thinking about the topic of this event. We've been in this job for many, many years, and this is the first time that we've had this event, which is like, what do we need for ourselves to cultivate the right personality, to cultivate, to be the right person to be in relationships moving forward? And the truth is, like, all of us sitting here, or any Rebbe in the yeshiva, or any mashgiach, thank you, wow. You know, guys are always coming over and wanting to speak about dating, right? And often the question is, well, what's like a typical question? You know, how do I know, what's that? How do I know if I'm ready to start dating? I mean, usually implicit in that might be issues of maturity, might be issues of finances, might be issues of giving up learning, might be sort of all of those things, which all of that is important. But really the first question that every person should be asking themselves, and not just at 22 or 23 or 21, but really throughout their lives, is, am I set up in life to embark in the most important thing in my life, which obviously is my relationship with Hashem Baruch Hu, but sort of secondary to that are all the relationships I have in my life, right? With my siblings, how do I sort of show up in those relationships? With my parents, with either currently or down the road with my wife, with my children, with my coworkers, my employees, my employer, right? Am I set up to be in healthy, giving, perhaps vulnerable relationships with those people? And so often the question is yes, but maybe there's things that are lacking. Maybe there are things that I need to address. Why do I have a hard time being close to people? Why do I have a hard time being vulnerable to people? Why do I find that I'm maybe breaking up with chavrusas or roommates or having tension with people? What are the areas in my life vis-a-vis the relationships with everybody? Not just like a future wife, but wife, children, friends, family members, coworkers, etc. What are the areas I have to work on my life to mashlim myself in that most important of areas? And that question, I would venture to say, is more important than any other question a person could ask themselves. Am I set up to be in healthy, close, well-functioning relationships with the people in my life for the next 70 years? I think there'd be nothing more critical than that question that you can pose to yourself. And Rebecca, I appreciate you sort of thinking about this program. So what we're going to do this evening is that each one of us are going to present either a midah or something about relationships. We're going to speak about that for a few minutes each. But I really want to sort of throw this over to you guys. Either questions about what we said, other questions, other issues that you've seen in your life. And we'll spend the next, 45 minutes, an hour, sort of engaged again in this really great topic. So, I'm sorry. I'll go last.
Okay. So I want to share in the vein of picking one concept. There's so many, obviously. It's multifaceted. I just wanted to pick one that I thought was absolutely critical to really focus on. That kind of resonates with me. And I've seen come up over and over again, different aspects of my life, different areas of my life, talking to different people, helping advise people. And that is the idea and the need of giving somebody 100% of your undivided attention. The ability to really to listen. And that is not a skill necessarily that is always cultivated in yeshiva and a beis medrash. Because if just the opposite, we kind of, we value the ability to debate, to argue, to prove a point, And that is an important value when you're learning yeshiva. The Gemara already in Kiddushin and Daf Lamed Beis says Esvaheva Sufa, that when you have a Rav and a Talmud, you have a Ben and an Av, and when they're Oskim B'Torah, so they it's a Melcham Shoshal Torah. They're arguing, they're fighting, and they become in a war, in a battle. As Rashi even says they're miskashing with each other, not makablim each other. They're the dvarim of each other. That's how Rashi interprets what it means to be in a war with your chavrusa. And you really battle it out. And ultimately, you're heading towards the MS. And so everyone's going to accept the MS ultimately, and that will create a bond. But to get that bond goes through a very tumultuous time of trying to make my point and to make it clear and to ask deep questions and penetrating questions that can slug the other guy up. And that's a chashuv skill. That's not kind of the skill that we necessarily want to bring into the more, the more delicate relationships in our lives. The ones that we have with when we're in chaver mode, or with our spouses, or Rebbe Lass said, the myriad of relationships that we have, that's not exactly the approach that's going to be the most helpful. And I think the flip side is, instead of making my point, instead of proving I'm right, but the idea of just to listen to a person, give them your undivided attention, is so powerful. Because what that expresses and what that communicates is that you're important to me. You matter to me. What you have to say is important to me. And I want you to know that I'm understanding you. And that's so critical. You can't do that if you're not just listening to a person. And sometimes we don't realize how powerful that is. But it's really, really powerful. It's really, really powerful. And so, what I would suggest is that you can take even some practical steps, even now. Even in the base medrash. You can take tikufos. Yeah, normally you're in chavrusa mode, and let's say you're energetic and energized, and you like someone fired up, like you're fired up, and you battle it out. That's fine. That's your normal mode. That's healthy. It's great. But once in a while, you know what? You can take a step back and say, you know what? Let me do it a little bit different this time. I'm just going to listen to my chavrusa pshat, and I just want to understand his pshat, like just to understand what he's conveying to me. And to be able to even reflect back to him. So if I hear you correctly, this is what you're telling me. You're telling me the pshat in this Gemara, and I hear it. I really get it. And just let them know that you are listening and hearing first before you have to interject your own idea. Maybe some people do that already. But I think that can help us get along that way of realizing that there's a koach to listening. That there's a communication in just listening. And you can become an active listener. Like, listening is not only about passive and sitting there like a rock. It can be active listening. What do we mean by active listening? It means showing the other person that you're actually in tune with them and that you're trying to understand 100% what they're trying to say. So when they're talking, to be expressive. When they're talking to be expressed back, I hear it. I get it. To ask questions that help them, can elaborate on what they're talking about. To be able to reflect back to them, so this is what I think I hear you saying, and let them confirm, or say, actually, that's not exactly my point. That wasn't really it. I was trying to say something else. Oh, say it again. I really want to get this.
Say it better.
Say better. You're not doing well. But that's active listening. You're participating in the listening, but you're really just listening. You're being there for that. That's one thing. I would also recommend another thing. I talked about the idea of giving 100% undivided attention. So we're so used to our devices and our phones and everything like that. But do we ever just hang out with our friends where we really intentionally put away our phones? I'm talking to my friend now, phone is away. It's just focusing on each other. To get into that habit, to say that I don't want distractions, you bring that to a family life. That's so caution, it's so important. When you're in your family life, to know that you're 100% there and present, not distracted. And we can do that now too. Maybe we don't do that. We're hanging out with our friends. Okay, so, we're not thinking about... But it's a good time. It's a good time to... Phones away. Let's just focus on each other. Let's just be present here. Be present in this moment. I think that's so, so valuable and so, so important. And one of the nukud I would say, and this is maybe a stereotype, but it's like a true stereotype, and this is... I'll relate this a little bit more to husband-wife, to man-woman relationships. And that is, when you're listening to someone... who's maybe going through a hard time, who has a problem, is dealing with a kind of a struggle, there's like a knee-jerk reaction to want to try to fix it. You don't want to fix it. And you give like suggestions. Oh, did you do this? Did you do that? And that's all great, but often, that's not what the person wants or needs. I was talking about the power of listening. They just want someone to hear them and be there with them. Half the time, the suggestions we make, they know that. Like, it wasn't brilliant. They could have thought of that. It wasn't so hidden. And the idea is, but we need to feel like we're doing something. Like, what do I do? So we jump in immediately, like, let's play fix-it mode. And to be able to hold yourself back a little bit and say, no, it's okay. I don't have to fix it. I just kind of listen. There's power in listening, too. There's power in the person knowing that I'm there with them, kind of sharing this moment with them, sharing the struggle, sharing the pain, you know, and that is very, very, very valuable. That's very valuable. And so to try to restrain a little bit is also an important mida skill within this idea of listening to try to work on. So listening ultimately is about showing a person that they matter to you, that they mean something to you, and that the relationship really matters to you. And that comes across in listening. Rav Huttner has a beautiful piece, and I'll just end with this, and then I'm sorry if I went a little bit too long. But Rav Huttner says something very beautiful. He says, you know, we say in Tehillim, we say in the Hallel, Ahavti ki yishma Hashem eskoli tachnunoi ki toz noli. We say, right, we express this love between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we say, why? Because Hashem listens to me, Shomei, Hashem hears me. But then it says, Kito is no leap. That Hashem leans in, and you know, inclines his ear to me. So what is that step? Hashem is listening. He's listening to my tachanunim, to my bakashos, my needs, and then he's inclining his ear to me. So it seems superficially, you would guess that, so the first part is Hashem is listening to my bakashos, means the yishma is Hashem is fulfilling my bakashos. I ask for something, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills. And then Kitos no li is Hashem then inclines his ear to me. That's when Hashem first listens to me about my bakasha. So Rav Huttner says it seems to be backwards. If the first part is that the yishma is Hashem fulfilling my wish, then that's the ultimate goal. Hashem should fulfill my wish. Why do I mention Kitos no li, that Hashem leaned in to listen to me after the fact? Like, he already fulfilled my wish, so obviously he was listening. As Rav Huttner says so beautifully, he says, well, you know what? If the ultimate purpose was just to get my wish, and it's true, it would be backwards. First, he tells me, Hashem listened to me, and then, Shoma, he fulfilled it, he accomplished my bakashos, my tachanunim. Says Rav Huttner, that's not really what it's about. It's not just about getting what I need. It's about the relationship between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that relationship, the similar davar that Hashem is there listening, is that he fulfills our bakashas. And when he fulfills our bakashas, we know, he's there, he's listening. But what is it really about? What's the end goal? Says Rav Huttner. It's really about that you should know that Hashem is listening. That's what it's really about. Hashem is there, and he's paying attention, and he's listening. And once in a while, we need to know that it's happening. Hashem fulfills our bakashas, say, yeah, I'm here. But what's the goal? The goal is that he's listening. And that should be our goal. Our goal should be that people know we're here, we're listening, we're attentive to them. That's the
clock.
Listen.
It's incredible. Can I just add one thing to that?
Please add.
I would just maybe invite all of you guys to think that when you're talking to someone, and almost like be mindful within yourself. If, let's say, I'm speaking to Rabbi Krohn, right? Krohn's a world-class listener, but which is totally true. And if, in other words, when someone's talking
Notice
to you,
you didn't pick me.
Yeah, no, we'll get to you later.
That's okay.
We'll get to if someone's talking to you or someone's talking to me, am I listening but sort of waiting to respond back and to say my piece? Let me tell you about something about me, where sort of the whole dynamic of that relationship is not about me in the way that Rav Huttner said so beautifully and Rav Bacon said so beautifully, just really being there in someone else's space in someone else's life, but it's like I'm talking to you and I'm listening to you, but then I'm sort of like waiting to really talk. Like, I want to get in my piece. And you know the difference. I know the difference when I talk to someone, whether they're really listening or whether they really want to turn this about themselves in some way. And I would just sort of, by way of like something in a very Lemaisa type of way, take note the next few days. When you're talking to someone, are you eager to talk about yourself? Or can you just be there with another person, being there in whatever they're going through? And that is like all the difference in the world in relationships, and Ray Bacon again said it so beautifully, but just sort of like another piece of that almost.
I can't tell you how many times the Shadchanim have told me that a girl comes back from a date and she says, the guy, what went wrong? She says, well, he was talking the whole time about himself.
Yeah.
And the guy will say, though, I asked questions. So I say, you, but what happened when she, so where did you go to camp? I went to, I don't know the place, Camp Misora. And so he says, oh, I went to Camp Levi, right? As opposed to, oh, Camp Misora. How many years did you go there? 3. What was it like? That's active listening. Right? When I ask the question so I can get my piece, that's not listening. Right? But when I ask so that I can ask again because I'm curious, it's a different story. Okay. I wanted to talk tonight for a few minutes about the Midah of Savlonus, of patience. Revolbi in Alishur, in the Midos Vads, has an entire perek on Ka'as o Savlonus. And he points out a couple of points about Savlonus that are just so, if you ask me, like, what's a Midah, you should work on, like, I don't know, it's Savlonus is like one of the ones that we think about as so central. But he writes actually that it's the most central midah that there is. And he writes that all midos of a person depend on patience. And he points out that when the Torah says, describes Moshe Rabbeinu, what does it say about Moshe Rabbeinu? That he was the anav mikol adam, right? He was the greatest anav there is. What's the description of a person who's an anav, a person who is humble? So we usually think like, I don't think so much about myself, and that's not really true, right? We know who we are. Rashi says, what does it mean? Savlan. He was patient. What made Moshe Rabbeinu one of the greatest human beings that ever crossed this earth is the fact that he had patience with other people. And Revolbi talks about, he gives a mashal. What does it mean to be a person who's patient? So he says, imagine the following. He says, every person that you come into contact with, so sometimes you have positive interactions and they say something nice and it's pleasant. And there are times in life, and probably multiple times every single day, when you come into contact with someone who thrusts something on you, a look, a comment, a judgment, something insensitive. And when that happens to us, what happens? We have to kind of hold it, right? We have to, we kind of hold that which the person has said to us, and it bothers us. And when someone does that to us, what is our natural instinct? When something's bearing down on you, what's the natural instinct to? Throw it off, right? And what it means to be a savlan, to be a patient person, is to be nosen, right? To carry that burden. And sometimes, there's a lot of times, there's that guy who says things that you find annoying. And he always sits at your table in the caf. And he makes comments. And it's just like, he's not a mean guy. He's not a not nice guy. It just kind of irks me. It irks me, right? And each time he makes another comment, it starts to build up. And then what builds up inside of a person? The desire to blow up, to respond. It doesn't have to be angry, but it might be sharp. Right, a desire to respond. Why? Because you want to unload that frustration with the person. What is a savlan? A savlan is a person who takes those burdens that people place on them and they carry them. You're right, you don't have to carry them forever. It's not healthy. You can't carry it around forever. Sometimes you have to unload it. Right? So you unload it sometimes to a friend, you unload it to someone you need to speak to. Right? That's what we call. We say it in English, I gotta get something off my chest, right? I feel like I need to unburden myself from the things that I experience with other people who kind of bother me. When we go home to our houses, if we're not married and we have siblings, or we have parents, who say things that irk us, I'm almost 39 years old. When I go back to my parents' house and we sit around the table with my siblings, you guys probably haven't felt the same experience, everyone falls into the same spot they were when we were 15. Your sister makes a comment, and you say, and everyone's ready to jump, and like, it's amazing. It doesn't matter how old you are, but when I'm 75, will be the same thing. Everyone gets their spot, and like, and you, like, you're so mature, and then all of a sudden, like, you're not. And you right? And it's easy to make that quick funny comment, which isn't so nice. Because you just want to, like, let it out. And there's a reason why, right? We talk about Kadosh Baruch Hu is, and because it happens also in this way, what Kadosh Baruch Hu, why we refer to Hashem is a nosei avon. Why is Hashem nosei avon? Because when we do things that kivyachol, or kivyibon shalom, what does he do? He doesn't throw it back at us. He carries it. He holds on to it. And what do we call the process of creating the most fundamental relationship in our lives besides the relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, relationship with our wife? It's called Nisuin. Because Nisuin is your commitment to carry at times the challenges of another person, right? We all know this, right? As we whatever relationship that we're in Mirat Hashem, when we get ready to start dating. So what's our job? Our job is not to find the perfect person, because that perfect person doesn't exist. No such thing. I'm not perfect, you're not perfect, no one's perfect. Right? And our job is to do what? Find a person that has so many wonderful qualities that I can handle the pieces about them that are challenging. Because every person has pieces about them that are challenging. And the more I can learn to be a person who's patient, who doesn't throw off that burden by, right, making the comment, saying that thing that we feel like we just need to say, but we know it's not going to be helpful. The more we can take a deep breath and say it's not worth it, I'll hold on to it for a little bit more. I'll drop it off somewhere else later. I'll write it down. I'll say it. I'll tell someone else. The more we can do that, it creates an experience in our home that is calm and peaceful and full of simcha. Because, by the way, it's not just your wife. You're in the mirat Hashem to have children who will do things that you don't like and that you wish they wouldn't do. And why do they bother us the most when our kids do it? Because we feel it's reflective of us. My kid won't do X or Y or Z, the thing that I always hope my child would do, and they don't do that. Or they just do things that are annoying. And what do we want to do? We want to tell them. We want to make a comment. And then if we do that, we don't have that patience. We create an environment of anger and challenge and testiness. And we learn to realize that everyone's dealing with something. Everyone's got their own thing going on. We can take that deep breath and we can hold it back a little. We create an environment in our house which is calm, which is understanding. It's not perfect, but it's calmer and more understanding and more easy to be around. Then you create a place where your kids want to be and a place where other people want to be. And to do that, it doesn't start, like we said, it doesn't start when you get married. It starts now. We all have people in our lives. Yibam Shalom is like genius, you know that. Created every single person different. And we all have different kohos, and we all have different things that are frustrating about us to other people, and the other people have things that are frustrating about them. It is how it is. I had a roommate when I was in yeshiva. He's a rav in yeshiva now himself. And we had a roommate, and he wakes up the second the alarm goes off. I like to snooze. It did not work well for us at the beginning.
That's why he's a Shiva. That's why he's a Shiva.
He's not a Shiva. It's ready. But it took some time. Because it was really annoying. It annoyed him a lot. So it took some time, right? So he had things he annoyed me. It's okay. But that was a really important experience for us. Because we learned to be patient and to recognize that everybody's not perfect. I'm not perfect, you're not perfect, everyone's got stuff. And that's okay. And the more we can take that deep breath and say, I'm willing to carry, I'll hold on to it a little bit, I won't fire it back. I don't need to be the funniest guy making the funniest comment at every person. I can just hold it back a little bit. It gives us an ability to get along with just about anybody. And we can get along with people. We may not be the funniest, we may not be the sharpest, but we're going to be a person who can get along with other people, then every relationship that we have will be more meaningful and go more smoothly.
And just before I mention the midah that I want to speak about, which is very similar to what Rabbi Cron said, I would just encourage everyone, you know, you heard Rabbi Bacon said so beautifully, and Rabbi Cron said beautifully, to not just sort of like listen to it and say, oh yeah, you know, Rabbi Cron's right or Bacon's right, I have to work on this. Like, our behavioral patterns are built into who we are. And unless, sort of as you're hearing this or thinking about these things, you're making sort of like a real conscious, almost like intentional thought of, oh yeah, like this is a situation I have to work on, or maybe even to write it out or take a note for yourself or journal or something of saying, listen, there are things about me that on its natural course, I'm going to continue to be a certain type of person. How do I go about changing these things? It's not just sort of like hearing a schmooze. It's like has to be very, very sort of avoda-based. I want to speak about really something that Ray Cronin said already, but I guess maybe look at it in a somewhat broader way. And I don't mind being somewhat repetitious only because I think, and the Baalei Mussar think that it's so critical. And I want to read to you a line from the Chazon Ish, that Rav Volbi also quotes. And I've learned this with many of you over the years. It's the very first paragraph, the fourth paragraph of Bnei Bitachon. So he says that there's basically one Midah Ra'a and one Midah Tova in the universe. And listen to these words. Hamida Hara'hi, what is the one fundamental flaw, basically, of every person or potential flaw? Everyone knows Chazon Ish? He has nacha es achayim hativim al mahalchum hativi. It's allowing for the chayim hativim. What's the best way of translating that? Maybe like natural impulse, natural hergish, to dominate over al mahalchum hativi, just to allow life to go on its natural impulse. Ubali kol hishtadlus. And if I just let my natural feelings flow, my natural reactions flow, without any efforts, I will be a great ka'ason, I will be a great nokem, I'll be a bal gaiva. If I just let myself go based on my natural impulse. And what's the one positive midah, the sort of the opposite of that? It's levaker, it's to prioritize the regesh hachiyuni, the elevated regesh, over the regesh tavani, over the impulse. One's entire life, I'll say this again, is do I have the capacity of allowing my higher consciousness to dominate over my impulse? Or is my life dictated by impulse? And I want to say just on a personal level, this has been my biggest avoda for about 51 plus years from the very inception of my life. Not just allowing a natural impulse to take over. I'll tell you an embarrassing incident that happened to me many, many years ago. Those of you who are Tamidim of Rosenzweig or otherwise might find it amusing. And it's obviously mortifying, but it sort of, it demonstrates in its sort of expanded form exactly what the Chazon Ish was speaking about, right? I was working, when I first got married, at a school in Muncie called Bas Torah. It's not important, the details. I was coming back over the George Washington Bridge after a long day. And back when Rabbi Cronin and Rabbi Bacon and myself, I don't know maybe if you were here also, but it used to be that if you were coming south on Amsterdam Avenue and you got to 181st Street, then you had to make a left to go into the Cross Bronx. Everyone know what I'm talking about? So now there is a left, is an arrow pointing you to go left. But back in the day, back in the Wild West of the Washington Heights, back in its glory days, there was no arrow, and there was always cars coming north on Amsterdam Avenue. And if you want to get into the Cross Bronx, you had to be like a crazed person, just like throwing yourself into the middle of the intersection to get onto the Cross Bronx and, you know, say a couple Pirkei Tehillim and just make a left and just try to. It was like driving in Cairo a little bit, for those of you who've been to Cairo. Anyway, so I'm coming north. I've been to Cairo, okay. It's a different story. That'd be a different truth. Anyway, so I'm driving north Amsterdam Avenue, and there's cars turning left in front of me going to the Cross Bronx. I'd had a long day. I was frustrated. I was irritated. I was hungry, I was tired. I'm like, there's no way those cars are going in front of me. Those cars are going left, and I'm driving, and I'm telling myself, I'm just going for it. I'm getting through. So I go get through the intersection on 81st Street. Somebody tries to make left in front of me, and I go through the intersection, my hand on the horn, like, get out of my way. And I look up, and it's Rav Rosenzweig making a left. my Masada Kedushin and Rebbe Mori. And I'm sort of like ducking under the wheel and also like saying like Shalom Aleichem Rebbe at the same time. And It's very embarrassing and it's somewhat funny, but it's probably an indication and something that I've had to work on for many years as far as how I drive, of not letting the impulse of frustration at drivers become so that you just feel you want to, you know, honk at someone, run somebody off the road, get close to somebody. Now, how many of hundreds of situations in my life or in your lives do we feel dictated by impulse? How many times, I'll say personally, when my children were young and something happens in school and they get a bad report, and then the first reaction is what? So this would never happen to you, of course, but I'm going up there right now. I'm going up there pounding on the door and, you know, waving a report card and I need to talk to you right now. Now, a person who is dictated by a regesh chiyuni, by an elevated sense, says, you know what, like, this is not the way to have a conversation. This isn't the right time to have a conversation. This isn't the time to tell my wife X, Y, and Z. This isn't the time, perhaps, to tell my parents some point of criticism after my mother has made this entire seder, and I'm not happy about something, and I'm going to somehow, in some type of way, make her known that I'm not happy about something. How many hundreds of situations do we go through in life where we are dominated by the impulse as opposed to a thoughtfulness of how do I want to show up? How do I want to communicate? Do I need to communicate? Do I need to express that point? Do I need to be angry in this case? Do I need to send that person that text? Do I need to write an email? Do I need to... Vahala, vahala. That's the single most fundamental midah of the capacity of always allowing the elevated presence, the godly presence of who we are, to dominate, dictate, inform everything that we do instead of allowing the impulse to come out. It's an incredibly beautiful, significant, and life-changing avoda, and something that the capacity to do that will allow for, in my mind, successful relationships. And the incapacity to do that creates continuous tension with the people in your life. Because you're not, as Rabbi Begin said, looking at the person, what do they need? It's me. My anger, my frustration, my expectations, I'm embarrassed, I'm this, I'm that, I need to... And then your life is about your own impulse and your own sort of self-centeredness. So I think those are the three midos for Megan spoke so beautifully about being a shomea, not just listening, but being a shomea. Rabbi Krohn spoke so beautifully about being a savla, not just being patient, but just, you know, living life non-reactively. And I spoke sort of in a similar vein about the capacity of the higher consciousness dominating over the impulse. And those are, I think, three critical midos. And we'd love to hear any thoughts, questions, feedback, challenges, complexities that you guys experience in your own life. And feel free to be as vulnerable as you think is appropriate. Yeah, Tom?
Just following up on what you were just saying.
What's that? Just talk a little.
Following up on what you were just saying. So let's say someone knows exactly what they have to work on. Say in a conversation with someone, they know they'll always interrupt, or they'll always make like a snarky comment or something. So a person is very self-aware of that, but how do you make sure that in the moment you don't do that? Because when you can think about it afterwards, realize, oh yeah, I made this mistake, but in the heat of the moment, it's very hard to remember all those points. So I guess, is there any practical way to implement all the things you were talking about?
So you're asking the most easy of questions. How does a person change your behavior? I'll let Rabbi Krohn and Rabbi Bacon.
I'm going to say this. I'm not going to answer your question directly, but I think it's an important thing to consider. I had a person...
Did everyone hear the question that was posed? Okay, meaning I know that I have this challenge. I know that I do it. I'm in the moment. How do I change that behavior?
So I'm going to answer your question a little differently than you would probably expect me to answer. I'm going to be careful how I answer this recording. I got an email. The wonderful thing about being a... No, you can leave it on. The wonderful thing about being a community rabbi is that you have the opportunity to make use of your savlanut very often. I'm kidding, I'm not kidding. Because oftentimes people who are upset about anything in their life, for some reason, there's probably a lot of reasons to say why, will come after the rabbi on whatever issue it is that's bothering them, which is usually never about that issue. It's about something that's going on in their life. But something gets them and they feel. And so I had a person send me an email after Purim one year. And they were furious, furious about the type of ingredients that were included in their sisterhood mishloach manos. Sent me an email like I cannot even tell you.
What could be so offensive?
There's no answer. No question. So it was a terribly offensive email. It was written with like very like capital letters and like, you know. Never send an email in capital letters to any person ever in your life. But what I often do is that if a person sends me an angry email, I don't respond to the email. I take a deep breath first and I wait. And then I will call them on the phone. Because usually once they get on the phone, they realize what they did and it makes it a little uncomfortable for them, but it usually, so this person sent me this very angry email. So I took like a few minutes to like take a deep breath and I called them and I know this person, I called them. And they pick up and they said, I know why you're calling me. I had a really bad day today. As they said, I shouldn't have made a big deal, I'm sorry. I said, and I was like, no, it's totally okay, I understand. We had a little conversation about one of the thing that was bothering them. What am I saying to you? When we use the midah of sablonus, when we are careful not to give in to impulse, and we take that deep breath, and we don't take the bait, not always, but a lot of the time, the other person will reflect back and do the exact same thing. They feel silly. If that person's attacking and you're calm, then they feel silly and they calm down a lot of times. So that's not how to do it. But if you try it here or there and you don't respond and you feel calm, you might actually see that reflected back at you, and that's the greatest chizik you can get to that meeting. Wow, it's so worthwhile. Look what that changed when that happened. When that person was upset and I was calm and how that felt, it's a great moment because it makes you realize the value of it and it gives you chizik to keep trying it. You won't always get it right. It gives you a chance to keep trying.
I would also add, and hopefully this is an obvious point, but it is true, once you're in the heat of a moment, it's very hard to change kind of learned behaviors, patterns we've been in for very, very long periods of time. But that's why it's so critical. You'll see in your life, it's so powerful that when you are processing outside of those moments, to think about it, to be aware of it, to create that awareness for yourself, to practice, how could I have responded differently? How if this happens again, to go through that dialogue in your own head, if that happens again, what can I say now? How can I do it differently? You know, some of it sticks. It sticks. You're practicing with yourself. You're going through it. And then, you know, in the heat of the moment, you can't pull all that awareness together. But if you've really worked on it beforehand, you have a much better chance. And that's what Limud Musar is all about. Limud Musar, like, you're just reading words. So what am I doing? I'm not doing anything. I just read the words. But the answer is by reading the words and that consciousness and letting it seep in and actually playing out scenarios in your head. And hopefully if you recognize it's a meter you're struggling with, then you have lots of examples that you can pull upon. So like, oh, okay, so that, and to go through it, like, what could I do differently? How could I have done that differently? It helps. It makes a difference. And nothing's overnight. Never expect change overnight. Change is always small, it's increments, it's baby steps. It's just the way it is. It's hard, you know, it's hard in our environment to accept that because we like things immediately. We want to see change right away. It doesn't go that way. You have to be patient with yourself. You have to be patient with yourself and know that you're on a derech. And if you are patient with yourself and not too self-critical, and you know you work on it, you try to create awareness, and you're doing some practicing in your head, you're gonna make progress. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I just want to maybe mention something, only because the question was so important. I don't want this to be a support group for shul rabbis. And just before I say this, both Rabbi Cronin and I have loved the Rabbanus.
We love the Rabbanus.
We love the Rabbanus.
So don't take sort of some of the crazy people you deal with as a warning away from Ravanas. But I want to tell you, actually, if you don't mind me, it's uncomfortable me speaking about the great moment of personal pride, but I want to tell you only because I think it's a relevant maisa, so to speak. I was learning in our shul on a Thursday night. We're going through Pirkei Avos. We did the mission of Nosei Bo'am Chaveiro. And I mentioned the pshat of Nosei Bo'am Chaveiro, of the Medrash Shmuel, which is beautiful, that you should be Nosei your friend even when he's acting like an ol. Nosei Bo'am Chaveiro, when he's acting like an ol, because you know that the words that he's saying, he doesn't really mean. Right? What's in his heart? Like, he's saying something, but sort of look beyond that, and you can tolerate that. Don't respond, and okay. Something happened in shul on Shabbos. We were having like an award presentation, and something happened. And all of a sudden, a guy comes over to me in shul, and I've been thinking about this Medrash Shmuel, Nosim Chaveiro, what a beautiful pshat it was, and how it can apply it to my life. And like, I really tried to integrate that midah. And a guy comes over to me at the Kiddush. I took one look at him. I knew I was in big trouble. He's a little bit of a crazy person, unfortunately. He was intoxicated. He had had like enormous tragedy in his life, and I knew I was going to get it. And he did not disappoint. Came over, he said, "Rabbi, you disgust me." He said, "Like, how do you look at yourself in the mirror?" He said, and he's like going on. And he wasn't creative about it. It was over and over again. "How do you look in the mirror? And you disgust me after all I've done for the shul, and you awarded that guy, and you gave this to this goy." I'm sorry for using this word, but, and me, and on. And like, people are trying to peel him off me. And I'm like, no. Like, let him sort of say his piece. And the whole while I'm thinking to myself of to be no say person, even when they're acting like an ol. And I just heard him. I said, "Listen, I understand what you're saying, and I'm sorry that you're hurt by it, and I'll think about it." Now, the only reason I had the capacity of doing that for 20 minutes of him berating me, telling me that I'm disgusting, was because I had been so conscientious for the days beforehand of how I could integrate the midah into myself. And when I even saw this person earlier that day in shul, I said to myself, you know what? He might be a good person for me to bring this like Medrash Shmuel into my being, right? So if every situation that we go into, I go into my house, I know that my mother may say X, and I know that typically I was going to respond Y. I know that my father could this. I know I may feel a certain way in shul. My chavrusa might trigger me in a certain way. My friends, and I'm just sort of, as Rabbi Bacon said before, sort of like, really integrating the messages of Musar into my being in advance. I'm conscientious of the situations I need that in. I know that my wife might do something and X, Y, and Z, and I'm just prepared for that. And is that perfect? It's never going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. But the avoda is beforehand and almost like preparing yourself for the very situations in which certain things might trigger your character defects, for lack of a better word. I think somebody, I think Ethan, who had their,
One of the things that resonated with me that you guys said was, or my friend said, about how there are some people that, you know, will get into a conversation with someone about, "Oh, what camp did you go to, Misora?" And then you'll say, "Oh, I went to Lavi," and you'll say all these different things. And like, that's definitely something that like would happen to myself. And I think the Asura Dabar, I've thought about it, like why people do this and why I see myself doing it, it's not just like a lack of like, we don't want to listen or we don't know how to listen. It's that the question that everybody proposed, you say, "Oh, how many years did you go there?" And then we just don't care. And I really think that it's especially on us caring. And like, how do we, and I, like, especially if someone's very like, you know, like tasked, like oriented, like want to know like, well, what's the reason, what's the purpose? Like, how do we just care about like more like kneeling to Alma and think of things?
I wonder if it's like, more, I appreciate your honesty so much in saying that. I'm serious. It's very, I mean it. Because this works when we're honest about how we really feel. I wonder if one possible answer to that is, acharei pulos mishachem levavos. Right? If I say to myself, and I believe that there's a value in being a good listener, which there is. It is, I cannot tell you. The importance. What your kids want from you more than anything else in the world is for you to sit and listen to them. Tell you about whatever silly thing that went on that day in school. If you're Zoha, that have children who want you to listen to them, you're going to be golden as a parent. Just to sit and listen. They don't want to hear your Eitzah. They just want you to pay attention to them. That's what most people want in the world, is someone to listen to them. So if we believe that that's a value and it's hard for us, so then tell myself, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to, rather than being critical or being annoyed, I'm going to become curious. Become curious. What's this going on in this person's life? Right? It could be on a date. It could be with a chaver. It could be with a guy that you don't know, who you're trying to make feel, person who you're trying to make feel a little included in the group. He's not a person who usually hangs out at your table. And you ask him about his life. How good that makes a person feel? You're like, yeah, but I don't really care. Like, are you from West Hempstead or are you from West Orange? Like, I don't know. Who cares? But it matters to him to tell you. It doesn't matter to you. You don't really care. And that's okay that you don't really care. But what you care about is making that person feel that they matter. So if you can ask for, oh, really, West Hempstead? Which shul? That's like silly. It's like shooting the breeze. Who cares? It's a waste of time, right? It is not a waste of time. It's not batala. It's probably it's like one of the greatest things you could do, to ask somebody to tell you about them. Because that's what people want. They want to feel that they belong and that someone cares about them and that they matter. No matter how tough we think we are. Everybody wants that. So maybe if we just exercise it, it'll actually help us see how much it matters to people. And then we'll see, you know what? Maybe it's worth it to them.
You might not care about what camp the person goes to, but you should care about the person. That's the whole point of dating, right? So it's not that you're so interested in the camp, but you're interested in making this person feel important. You're interested in this person's life. That is the highest possible value in a way. You know, it's not necessarily the details of, okay, yeah, who cares? You know, I'm not interested, but there's a bunch of hands up. Anybody know Ephraim Roosevelt? Yeah, wasn't someone else? Etsy did? Anybody know him first, or?
Just good. Who's that?
Yeah, got
so, Kenny. Within the concept of being no-say-all, I feel like if you keep on being no-say-all, it comes to a point where you just explode, and like, if there comes like a, like physically, if you have too many alls, or whatever, all in, all those, whatever, you say, then you're going to fall down. So I think we're in the same idea with mentally, if you have too many sort of, not actually grudges, but grudges in your head on people, it won't be good for the way that you act in general. And it's going to, at the end of time, you're going to come to, there going to be too many grudges. So how do you sort of...
Sure. Everyone hear Kenny's question? I mean, I think just, you know, a couple things. I think the first is that there's a value in knowing how to process and surrender and let go of resentments, right? I have a grudge against that person, I have a grudge against this person. And maybe that part of your avodah then is how do I find ways of letting that grudge go, of maybe being more compassionate or being, right? And to walk around with grudges is like difficult and toxic and burdensome, and maybe part of that avodah is to know how to be somebody that can let those things go, let go of resentments, and how do I work through that? That's number one. Number two, especially in situations like Rev Krohn's describing, or maybe what I described, or your child is really difficult, or this person is difficult, like, yeah, you need to find ways of having self-care, and you need to have someone you can talk to and say, listen, I got to talk to you about something. This congregant is making me crazy, or this person, and issues with my father is so tense now. And yeah, to have sort of like be able to have a place where you can like open up that valve and let that go, that's obviously important. So I think both of those things are important. Learning how to deal with resentments, number one. And number two, when life becomes too much, whatever those things are, of what's the mechanism you have to deal with that. And I think, you know, that's absolutely important, and Kenny, I appreciate you raising it.
I would just, I would add to that, because that's all true. Part of it is self-care and finding places to be able to unload those burdens that Rabbi Krohn talked about, and Rabbi Lass talked about. Depending on how significant the relationship is, and this you really have to kind of really work through with somebody to kind of figure out to finesse it and the nuance of it. But depending on the significance of the relationship, very often, you know, it's a two-way street. It's a dynamic between you and somebody else. And very often, it can actually be addressed if you just learn the right words, learn the right tools to be able to have a discussion in a vulnerable and open way with somebody. You can actually really make progress. You can really change relationships. And if they're significant relationships, then you have to do that work. It's a disservice to like kind of always just brush it off and say, oh, I'll just keep taking the punches. You know, if it's a parent and a child, to get to a better place is so critical. It'll change your whole life. So there are very significant relationships where we want to just figure out how to work on it. Every case is unique, and how to address it is going to be unique. But you should talk to somebody, because there's a lot of great, you know, either therapists or whatever, who can really give you tools to actually open up a conversation that can be healthy and helpful and move that relationship in a better direction. And I've seen it, and I've read about it, and it's very powerful. So it's uncomfortable, and it's difficult to vote on. Certainly, if you have a dynamic that's been going for a long time, it's very, very hard to do it differently. It's just very hard to break that. And there are a lot of emotions that go along with it. But it is so important and worthwhile to try.
The hour's late. Just going to take two last questions, maybe E.T. and Akiva, and then we'll obviously, we encourage all these conversations to take place. These are really the kishkas of what yeshiva should be about. And this doesn't begin or end this evening. We feel blessed to have a relationship, I think, with everybody in this room in some capacity. And please, by all means, let's continue to sort of have these conversations moving forward. And again, just E.T., and then we'll close with Akiva.
So what was mentioned before was kind of taking things in stride. The other person, maybe my reblast's story, the other person is yelling at you and saying whatever they want to say. Are we meant to be like a shmata and dealing with difficult people?
Well, clearly the answer is no. I mean, a person should never sort of say, oh, yeah, I should just be a shmata. You know, every situation is, a little bit different. You know, typically if you have a relationship in your life where you're the shmata in that relationship, that's not a relationship that's working. And if it's with a friend or if it's maybe with an employer, you know, you can choose to say, this relationship's not working for me and I need to sort of move away from that relationship. What's difficult is that sometimes relationships where you feel like a shmata, like with myself, with that Baal Boss, or maybe some with Rabbi Krohn, are sort of situations that maybe we can't always sort of get ourselves out of that situation, right? And then we end up sort of feeling maybe a little bit almost mistreated or a certain inequality in the relationship. And that becomes, you know, difficult and complicated when I'm in a relationship and I don't love sort of the energy of the relationship, and it's not sort of like face-to-face, it's not respectful. You know, how do I navigate that? Now, with the person in my shul, which I used to be the rav in, that's not a person I could have that conversation with. That's probably in the 10% of cases, right, Bacon was sort of alluding to, where you can't have that conversation with the person. The person's not healthy enough, they can't understand it, it's not going to be well, they're going to just be defensive, they're not going to be receptive, and then you sort of have to figure out what to do. But in many situations, where Bacon says, where I feel a little bit like a shmata, that's when you have a conversation with somebody. You know, that's when you sit down with somebody, that's when you have a dialogue with someone. And if you can't, and you're stuck, then that's complicated, and I think you probably need a lot of help and support how to deal with it. But I think the situation is either A, let me get out of that, let me sort of deal with it if I can't get out of it, or let me sort of address that to the person. But the person should never sort of feel like I'm stuck. You know, there's always sort of some ways of thinking about it and navigating through that in some way.
I think also, I agree with everything you said. I think also, though, there even
thank
with...
You. Thank you. Yeah.
But I'm handling it. But besides that, there are lots of people in our life that we have very close, meaningful relationships with who still will do things that are still a little bit frustrating for us. And sometimes, obviously, when it's real and fundamental to the relationship, you got to talk about it with that person. But sometimes it's not worth it. Right? Everyone's gonna, you know, with your parents, you might marry somebody who's amazing for you and also takes 20 minutes to get ready when you take 3 seconds. Right? It's a little different between men and women getting ready. You'll find out if you don't know yet. Right? You take 30 seconds and they take a lot longer. And sometimes it's frustrating. And sometimes it's worth it if it's you're making you late to an appointment. And sometimes it's not worth it. And sometimes you just kind of have to, we do just learn to let it go. It doesn't make you a shmata. It's not something that's dealing all the time and it's such a big deal. If it's such a big deal, then you got to talk about it. But some things are not such a big deal. And the point is sometimes for ourselves, not to make everything that irks us a big deal, because some things are not. And I think that's important also, because if there are close people in our life, if you have a roommate, right, and that roommate is constantly bringing up to you all the time the things that you do wrong or things that annoy him, like, oh, he's so communicative, he communicates so great, yeah, but it's pretty offensive that the person constantly talking about the things they don't like about you, right? So like, that's not so great either. So it's a balance, right? Not being a schmatz all the time. And by the way, I love being a rabbi. I love being a rabbi. And most people I deal with are not like that. And those are extreme cases. But they illustrate the point. But I think a lot of times, it's just things that we see around us that are like a little bit not our style, or a little bit not our ashkafa, a little bit not our thing. And sometimes people say, you know what? Like, I'm not going to make a big deal about that. It's okay. You know, I think that's a piece to it though.
Give them, and then we'll wrap it up.
So, I guess the need that Kroger last talk about self-awareness and losing the love. So, I don't know if it's really true, but I think a lot of bad needles, and specifically like that one, might be rooted in like insecurity. And two-part question: one, how can we help ourselves become more secure? And two, if there are people in your life who see being insecure, are there ways to help friends, family members become more secure? Let's say either by not talking about it, like things you can do for them, or like how do you open up a conversation about that?
Kiba, thank you for in typical fashion asking a hugely sophisticated and thoughtful question at 1 o'clock in the morning. Listen, I would just echo what you said. And the solution to that is years and years and years of work, right? If let's say you come over to me and you just lambast me, which I know you wouldn't do, but, and you just, whatever, you know, who knows, right? Then immediately, if I'm not a secure person, or if I'm not a whole person, or if I'm something, I'm taking everything you said in, right? And it's hitting me, and I don't have great protective boundaries. I'm just, everything is just coming in because I'm not a secure and maybe whole person who's completely comfortable with myself. And therefore, because I'm taking everything in, as Ray Bacon said, as Ray Crone said, now I have to come back on you. I have to be reactive. I have to be defensive. I have to be angry. Well, you said that me, I'm going to tell you. And then the goal is to spend a life working on yourself where you're just benachas. You're upset at me? Okay, I appreciate your perspective, and I hear that, and I'll work on it, but how to work on insecurity, that is sort of the avoda, and if a person's lucky, they're given great security from their parents, but that's not always the case. That's like the avoda of years of breathing in a sense of one's own erech, and one's value, and that's like a lifetime accomplishment. It's a lifetime work. It's a lifetime avoda. And sort of only by coming to a place where we're okay with ourselves can we be in healthy relationships, because if now we're always in some sort of state of reactivity. And then the details of that we can sort of speak about, how to build that security. But the premise, I think, is correct.
With other people?
How to make another person more secure in themselves? Good luck. Listen.
No, it's hard. I would say two things. In terms of helping other people, and I mean this seriously, I would actually, not in all cases, every case is different, I would probably avoid it. Because I think that if the person's already insecure, and then I'm like, hey, let me tell you something, like, you're pretty insecure. Like, that's not going to, right? But even if I intimate it, or I hint at it, that can be a very hard thing for a person to hear. And also, it's such a hard thing to work on, like Rabbi Blas said it, like, I don't know, like, what we can. The truth is, right? If you go into helping professions, you're going to be a therapist, you're going to be a rabbi, you're going to be a bechanach. We don't change people. Nobody can. Right? We can never change somebody. A person can only want to change themselves. We can help them to figure out for themselves what they want, but it's ultimately we can't. It's impossible for us. And a person, we can be the supportive of someone who wants to, but if they're not interested, it's very hard to do that. But just in terms of the feeling more secure with ourselves, sometimes I find that like negative models can be helpful. When you see somebody do something and you're like, holy cow, that was like, right, the way they said something, like, why did you need to say that to that person? You must feel so empty. And no one's fully empty, but if I have an emptiness that made them feel to do that, and you see that and you say to yourself, like, I don't want to be like that. You know, there's a value in negative models also. You see something that you don't want to be like, you're like, oh my gosh, that person talks about themselves so much and doesn't give a person, anyone else, a space to breathe. You can say to yourself, you know what, that's something that, not judging them, but saying, I know that I don't want to be like that. I don't like the way that feels myself, so I don't want to be that for somebody else. And it can say, like, you know what, I got to be able for myself to say, I'm good enough, I don't have to fill all the space. I'm good enough that I don't have to, right, go after somebody or make the joke. Most of us are not screaming, yelling at people. It's usually much more soft and much more nuanced. But I don't need to do that. And we sometimes even, you know, it's a life avoda. We're all working on it still, you know. But I think using models of people that we see do that and say like, well, how can I be like that? I don't want to be him. I want to be like that. And what do I see people who are not like that? And how much I don't want to be like that. And I think sometimes that can be a helpful thing. Because it's hard to figure out for myself, what does that mean to be secure? Sometimes you see it. And if you see it, it can help you to try to, you know, emulate that.
I just add
works.
One other thing. You know, ultimately... I was terribly insecure. I would just add one more thing, because all that is absolutely true, and it is a life of hope, and everything you said is absolutely correct. But one other thing just to bear in mind, like the more that we can enhance and nurture our relationships with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the more that we can also help other people in their avodas and relationships with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more secure we're going to be. Because ultimately our sense of self comes from tapping into our chelak ha'amal, knowing that we have a neshama tahora, that's a piece of our kodesh baruch, but that's what gives us our strength. That's what gives us our worth. And if you believe that, like, what do you mean? I've godliness inside of me. I mean, so, and constantly, and people find it in different ways. That's why, you know, Hasidus is so popular, and some of these books are so popular out. I was just listening on my way in today, tonight, to Rav Yaakov Klein. Everyone knows, you know, He did a podcast for Meaningful People, and people connect to that. And there's a whole world out there, a lot of tools that are a lot more accessible now than probably 20 years ago to help people build that relationship, the Rabbona Shalom. And then, you know, security does flow from there, not lafuke, anything else that was said. But that's really important. Help people to find that relationship, help yourself to find that relationship, keep nurturing it and growing it. You'll be so much more yeshiva das. You'll just be much more calm. Things won't irk you the same way. So, obviously, when we talk about relationships, they're so complicated and multifaceted. We touched upon a few things. There's so much more we can talk about. Hakar satov and being a mevater, v'chule. We go on and on. But beginning this dialogue and discussion, hopefully what we discussed was meaningful and things we can think about and try to inculcate in our lives, and also remind us as a whole avoda to keep working on, you know, and to think about these things. What are the other pieces? This is like a reminder, a little kick in the pants. I gotta be working. I'll end off with this kind of a joke that's said, but I think it's really true. You know, so the guy shows up a week before his wedding to the rabbi and says, you know, teach me what it means to marry. Or you know, someone just has a baby and they go to a mentor or to a rav and say, now how do I become a good father? And the answer the rav says is, well, you're 25 years too late, because it's a life avoda. You know, it's something that we should be always engaging in working on. We're not supposed to wake up one day. Obviously, there are tools and things we can learn even at those moments of the day after you have a baby. But the idea that it's a life avoda and something we should be working on constantly and being aware of, that's what we're supposed to do. And we take advantage of it. While in yeshiva, now, let's take advantage of it. And this is the tekufa, because really we're in sfira. And what's sfira about? We're getting ready for Kabbalah Satoru. Now Rizal writes the tekufa of sfira, and the vote of sfira, is the midos. You want to get ready for Kabbalah Satoru, so derech eretz Kabbalah Satoru. Now we're working on the midos. That way we'll be ready for a klei kibul to give a Kabbalah Satoru. Have a great night, everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you want to say? Well,
I just want to say this one last thing.
Yeah.
After I'm trying to move things forward, I apologize. I really appreciate when guys come to me. I don't mean me per se, but guys will be, listen, I'm getting married soon. I think that you know me well. What are the things I need to work on to be like a better husband, right? And those types of relationships, whether it's with mashgiach or a close friend or siblings, where you can really get feedback about where you're at and how you come off and what are things you have to work on, like to have a real, like, deep chaverim with people, like in a vod setting or the rabbi setting, like to have those people in your life to sort of continue that conversation and to seek those people out, have those types of friends, relationships, people. It's really invaluable, and it just it elevates those relationships as well. So I encourage you to have these conversations with us, but whoever the people are in your life, to make sure you have those people as well. So I just wanted to throw that in. Okay, guys, thank you so much. Stephen,
can you close this?